Coming up on today's episode of the Locked On Bucks podcast, we preview this weekend's game against the Lions, and we have another chapter of David Reviews Star Wars.
Guys, do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. Blue Chew, that's blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as the pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. For instance, you know, a lot of guys talk a big game, but if you're a one and done kind of guy, Blue Chew can even help you get to round number two. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than the pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for all our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when using our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay the $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, to try Blue Chew for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast.
You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Forfeit the game before somebody else takes you out of the frame. Put your name to shame, cover up your face. You can't run the race, the pace is too fast, you just won't last.
What's up and welcome back to the Locked On Bucks podcast. I'm James Yarko, joined as always by David Harrison. You can find everything that we're doing over at BucksNation.com and make sure you follow along on Twitter at Locked On Bucks, at Jarko underscore Bucks, at DH82 underscore Bucks, and at Bucks underscore Nation. We have a game 2 days from now that we're going to preview, but I can't watch it. We got into that yesterday. If you missed out on that conversation, it was in yesterday's episode. We answered a bunch of voicemails and a Twitter question. We just had a grand old time, didn't we, David?
It was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it as well. Judging from the reaction on Twitter, so did some other people. And shout out Leighton for letting me know what I had missed in the press conference regarding Jameis's injury. Yes, I know. I should have been a little bit more prepared. I was fighting with Christmas lights all day long. You all know what I'm talking about, how frustrating that can be. I test the strain of lights that I'm going to put on the tree. I see that I got some of the lights out. I test them, get the one that's burnt out, replace it. All the lights light up. I'm like, oh, fantastic. Put all the lights on the tree, plug it in. Two thirds of them are out. So now I have to battle them while on the tree, blending in with all the branches. Again, you guys know how that is. Very frustrating. Took a 10-minute job, took like 2.5 hours. It was awful. Awful. But now the tree's up and it's all pretty and yay. So David.
Yes.
We have a voicemail that we're going to tackle before we get into this preview. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can we hear it?
Yes.
Hey, James. Hey, David. It's Chris at TV underscore Bucks underscore for life. Hey, just had a question for you guys and just want to know where your headspace is at. Given the fact that, you know, this week you've seen a lot of Peyton Manning and Jameis Winston comparisons, I've honestly been doing that for months now, tracking those two, because I think they're kind of similar. You know, people will point out, well, it wasn't a passing league when Peyton Manning was playing ball. He threw up. That's one question. The second question is, all right, so take everything you know about Peyton Manning away. You know, just take it as it was for the first 5 years of his, you know, from 1998 to 2002 or 2003, whenever his 5 years was, right? And so he had 138 touchdowns, 100 interceptions, 11 fumbles. And with all those numbers, you know, you can even go to ProReference.com, compare the two. Would you think a fan base would react the same way to Peyton Manning's 100 interceptions to Jameis's 81 interceptions, you know, plus his fumbles. Just curious, just want to see what your thoughts are. I asked someone else that question earlier today, and the answer kind of surprised me, so I just wanted to pose it to you and David. Interested to hear what you say. Have a great day. Go Bucks.
All right, Chris, thank you for the phone call. Look, I think it's kind of surprising how similar the numbers are. And I think that there may be something to that. It shows that Jameis obviously still has plenty of room for growth, but you can't overlook the differences in the NFL from 98 to 2002 and 2015 through 2019. They're very different games. The rules are in place in this era to favor the wide receivers, to favor the quarterbacks, and that can't get lost in the comparison. I realize, you know, Jameis has, you know, in his age 25 season, which is the comparison that I saw the other day, where the numbers are basically straight up identical. Jameis has a little bit higher of a quarterback rating, but the exact same touchdown to interception ratio, 1.4 to 1, same number of wins, same or similar touchdowns and interceptions, all that. Back in Peyton Manning's age 25 season, no quarterbacks had a quarterback rating of over 100. Now there's, I think, 6 or 7. And it's because it is a different league. So it's not an apples to apples comparison. What it does is it shows the potential for growth for Jameis because he is doing similar things. Peyton Manning came into this league with an elite run game and an elite defense. Maybe not elite, upper tier run game and defense. And people want to point out, well, Jameis Winston has Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. Okay, well, Peyton Manning had Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne in those first 5 years. But he also had Edgerrin James. So what people like to point to is, yeah, the numbers are similar, but Peyton Manning was better because his team won more games. Okay, well, his team was built to win more games. You know, Jameis Winston has not had a defense anywhere even close to the one that Peyton Manning had in his two playoff seasons within his first 5 years. It's the same thing that we saw on the Speak for Yourself, where TJ Houshmandzadeh was trying to explain why he would take Jameis Winston over Cam Newton. And people were throwing the stuff out. Jameis has had a good defense. He had that, what's that guy's name? Like, that's literally what the dude said. He had, what's that guy's name? So he had one player that you can't even reference. And then they bring up, well, he's got Shaq Barrett this year. Okay. Last time I checked, there's 11 starting players on the defensive side of the ball. You can't point to the first 4 years of Jameis Winston's career and say, well, he had Lavonte David and Gerald McCoy. That defense was solid. No, not even a little bit. And somebody else said, you know, great quarterbacks rise above the in spite ofs. You know, Jameis Winston should be able to rise above and win in spite of having a bad defense. What were Cam Newton's in spite ofs? An elite running game, bringing in Christian McCaffrey, was his in spite of having a future Hall of Famer in Steve Smith and a potential Hall of Famer in Greg Olsen as his receiving options? Was it in spite of having a top five defense? Like, what adversity did Cam Newton face? I would take Jameis over Cam Newton. Absolutely. Jameis is a better quarterback. Cam Newton had everything handed to him on a silver platter. Everything. Jameis has better receiving options, but a worse offensive line, a worse run game, a worse defense. You have to take the problem with doing this whole Peyton Manning, Jameis Winston comparison is you can't stat scout It's different eras. It's different rules. So it's, again, it's not an apples to apples thing. So the biggest takeaway, again, is it shows that Jameis has room for growth. It shows that the turnovers, while frustrating and stupid at times, is something that could potentially be fixed in the long term. But Jameis Winston is not Peyton Manning. Jameis Winston will not be Peyton Manning. That's all I got. David?
Yeah, the differences in the game, you know, matter. That's a significant thing. And just to put things into a little bit of perspective, okay, Peyton Manning in his rookie season threw for over 4,000 yards. And it's one of the reasons, like, Peyton Manning started his career with you know, so many 4,000-yard seasons, and he had four out of his first five seasons, he threw for 4,000 or more yards, and that's one of the reasons why he was considered very early on one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And so people like to say, well, Jameis Winston has a whole lot of 4,000-yard seasons too, and that's true. But here's the thing. In 1999, okay, seven quarterbacks finished with 3,500 passing yards or more. Seven. In 2019, all right, we've already got five with over 3,500 yards, three games left to play. We've got eight with over 3,400 yards, and we've got 16 with over 3,000 yards, three games to play, 500 yards passing. That's a pretty doable number. So, I mean, you're looking like Andy Dalton's got 2,700, probably not making 3,500, but can Kyler Murray throw for another 500 yards over the next three games? It's doable. Is it going to happen? I don't know, but it's doable. So in theory, I mean, can Derek Carr throw for 400 more yards in three games? Baker Mayfield, 400 in three games? Carson Wentz, 400 in three games? Like, all these guys could feasibly hit 3,500 yards in the next three games. That would give the NFL 16 passers this year. Six, that's double. That's twice as many from when Peyton Manning was a rookie. Go back to Trent Green. And I remember Trent Green a little bit later in his career, you know, he kind of caught fire for a few years with the Kansas City Chiefs. One of the reasons people were so amazed at what Trent Green was doing, because he threw for 4,000 yards 3 years in a row. That was the NFL back then. Jameis Winston has thrown for 4,000 yards three out of his five seasons, and two of the seasons he didn't, it's because he missed games. I mean, he only played 13 games in 2017. He only played 11 last year, so that would be why he didn't hit the 4,000-yard mark. If you look at his averages or yards per game, he's on par. He would have hit at least 4,000 had he played the full season, if you extrapolate that data across the board. But in today's NFL, that's not really a big deal. I mean, there was a minute there where rushing for 1,000 yards wasn't a big deal for running backs. Now is today's NFL. It's not necessarily celebrated, but it's really nothing to have a running back that doesn't hit 1,000. You can have a successful NFL franchise without a running back that rushes for 1,000 yards. You know what I mean? So the differences in leagues matters. And James is going to hate me for bringing this up, but that's why I always say that it's really dumb to compare Michael Jordan to LeBron James. They're playing in two completely different leagues. You look at Steph Curry and you look at Reggie Miller. They're playing in two different leagues. They're playing the same game. They're playing the same sport, but they're in completely different leagues. So it doesn't make sense to compare the one, because if you want to just look at stats, like James said, stat scouting, right? I mean, yeah, Peyton Manning threw for 138 touchdowns through his first five seasons. Jameis Winston so far has 114. Is he going to hit 138? Probably not. Peyton Manning threw 100 interceptions. Jameis has 81 right now. Even though he's throwing a lot of interceptions this year, he's not going to hit 100. But if you take Jameis Winston's fumbles, and that's part of his problem as well, Jameis Winston has lost almost as many fumbles in his first 5 years as Peyton Manning did in his entire career already. Peyton Manning fumbled the ball 75 times total in his entire career. Jameis Winston has fumbled the ball 50 times in 5 years. Peyton did it 25 times more in his entire career. All right, so that's part of it. It's the difference in the game. That's what it is. And if we want to be honest, it's the way that Jameis came into the National Football League. Jameis Winston came into the National Football League with a little bit of a tarnished reputation. I mean, he didn't go to jail. He wasn't, you know, nothing like that. But he had some baggage with him. Whether it was validated or not, or, you know, lawsuits were legitimate or not, it doesn't matter. In the world of social judgment, Jameis Winston came into this league with baggage.
All right. Well, David, let's go ahead and jump into the game preview. Anything you want to touch on before we get into our prediction segment?
No.
Outstanding. David, who is your predictive offensive player of the game?
Jameis Winston.
Oh, that's
because what I'm going to go with. You probably thought I was going to go Chris Godwin.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
That's an easy answer, too. But, I mean, James Winston's an easy answer, too. Because, again, I mean, at the end of the day, the question of this season is what's going to happen in the future. Like, if this team continues hot and wins, you know, wins out or wins two of their last three or whatever, the question is going to be how can they carry that into next season? We've already been discussing that. If they flame out, the question is going to be how does that impact next season? Who's going to leave and, you know, all that. But the biggest part of next season is Jameis Winston. He's the quarterback of this team. He's one of two players that touches the ball in every single snap, every single offensive snap anyway. And he's the one who controls the destiny of the team the most, blah, 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 blah. So he's the biggest one. So these last three games, really, I mean, Jameis Winston is – we might want to have the Jameis Winston rule because he is the key offensive player to every single game. Because win, lose, or draw, everything is going to circle around how did Jameis do and what did it do to impact the team in a positive or negative way. And that's going to be used to determine the future of this team. Even though I honestly am, I'm in the belief that they've already made their decision. They're just not wanting to tell anybody.
All right. My predictive offensive player of the game. Are you ready? Are you ready, David? Are you ready?
Yes.
Justin Watson.
Jeez. Okay.
Look, we talked about it on yesterday's episode. Reasons to keep watching this team despite being out of the playoff hunt. And one of those, David covered the first reason, Jameis Winston. The second reason that we really stressed was who is going to emerge as that number three receiver. Justin Watson had an outstanding day against the Indianapolis Colts. And I think that's going to carry over against the Detroit Lions. They are going to put all their focus on Chris Godwin. And they're going to say, look, we know Chris Godwin is good. We know OJ Howard is good. You're not going to beat us with those guys. If you're going to beat us in our own stadium, it's going to have to be with one of these other characters. It's going to have to be with Perryman or Watson or Scotty Miller if he plays, or Ishmael Hyman or Cam Braid or freaking Tanner Hudson. It's going to have to be somebody besides Chris Godwin. And the connection that Jameis and Justin had on Sunday against the Colts, I think could be really, really dangerous for this Bucs offense going up against a depleted, defeated, and frustrated Detroit defense. So, David. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I like it.
All right. Who's your predictive defensive player of the game?
It's Lavonte David. So, losing a guy like Mike Evans is obviously important for the offense, but really it's important for the entire team because he's a leader on the team, not just on the offense. And I feel like, especially with as young as this roster really is, that anytime you lose a leader, I mean, I don't know. Like, we've seen injured players travel before. I don't know if Mike Evans is going to Detroit or not, to be honest with you. I don't know that information. If he's there, it would probably help just kind of the morale of the team and all that stuff. And he can kind of be on there like an extra coach and all that stuff. If he's not, either way, he's not on the field, and that's going to play an impact. It's easy to lead when things are going well. So if the Buccaneers can come out, we already know that if they have the chance to get the ball first, Bruce is going to take the ball first. If the Buccaneers can come out and score first, especially a touchdown, and then, you know, the defense comes out and you're already playing with the lead and you stop the Lions and the Bucs come back and they get another score. And then, you know, if the Lions go down two scores early, like it this kind of has the feel of one of those games that can just kind of roll to a certain type of point. Then it's easy. We don't have to worry about it. It's really not a big deal. But if it doesn't go well, if Jameis comes out and throws an early interception, or if there's an early fumble, or if the offense just isn't clicking, like Mike Evans, you know, the absence of Mike Evans, the double coverage on Chris Godwin is more of an impact than everybody expected, and the Detroit Lions come out fighting, then that defense could very well, because they're the younger part of this organization, could very well start feeling the stress of it. And with everything going on, I mean, win streaks are good, obviously, but they're still stressful because, you know, when you're on a winning streak, the last thing you want to do is end that win streak. So now the pressure is keep it going. So that's where a guy like Lavonte David's going to be key, is if this game is closer than people want it to be, closer than maybe some expect it to be, or some things don't go wrong early, a guy like Lavonte David, not so much his play, because we know his play is going to be there. It's always there. it's his leadership. That's going to be important. It's going to be critical to this team staying on track and not allowing themselves to fold when things can kind of, you know, like a team kind of get the yips on a certain Sunday because, oh, crap, we're losing all of the mojo we had, and now what do we do? Levante David's the guy who's got the answer on what to do, so that's who I'm looking at.
All right. My predictive defensive player of the game, low-hanging fruit, just give me Ndamukong Suh. He's returning to Detroit, where it all started for him. I'm not saying he's going to have a huge game, but a sack. I think a sack would put him on the map for a lot of people in this particular game. So, yeah, that's pretty much the extent of it.
I like it as well. At the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down, take some time off, and watch some football. Game-winning touchdowns on two-minute drives, running backs racing down the sidelines with no one to stop them. There's nothing else like the NFL, and there's no better way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. So do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts and better lines than any other sports book. Don't forget, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on, and mybookie.ag is the best in the business. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate this offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
All right, David, bold prediction.
My bold prediction. I'm going to preface this like I always do. The Tampa Bay defense, you know, even though everybody talks about them being the worst defense in the National Football League, they're only allowing 34% of third down conversions to be converted against them, or third downs to be converted against them, which is near the top of the league, despite the fact that they're facing 171, or they faced 171 third downs this year, which is the eighth most of any team in the league. The offense, the Buccaneers offense, is 13th in the league in converting third downs. Not as high up, but they're still pretty high up there. 41% is what they're doing. And they've faced 178 third downs while converting an average of almost 23 first downs per game, which is fourth most in the National Football League. My bold prediction is both of those units are going to do better on each of those numbers this week than their season averages. So the defense is going to allow less than 34% third down conversions to the Lions, and the offense is going to convert more than 41% of their own third downs.
That was a lot of numbers.
Listen, it's a math day. All right. You guys have forced me to, well, I'm not even going to get to it, but my score prediction's coming.
Okay. My bold prediction is coming off the heels of my score prediction, which, for those that didn't hear it, I'm going to repeat it shortly. The Buccaneers are going to score 3 touchdowns in this game. None of them will be by Chris Godwin. Is that bold? Considering Mike Evans is out,
it's bold-ish. I mean, bold-ish. We know the Lions are going to focus on Chris Godwin, so it's, I mean, it's like, it's not outside the realm of possibility to think that the Lions are just going to do everything they can to prevent Chris from beating them and force a Justin Watson to beat them. So, you tried to jump over a hurdle without stretching. That's how bold that is.
Do you want me to go bolder? Because I'll go super bold.
I mean, you can. I'm not really sure how bold my prediction was, to be honest with you. So, I mean, you can, but yeah.
Ryan Griffin gets a touchdown pass.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
How's that?
It's definitely bold.
Okay. All right. Again, for those that didn't hear it, please make sure you go back and check out Crossover Wednesday with Matt Derry of Locked On Lions. But on that show, I predicted a Buccaneers victory 33-20. I'm trying to get a little wacky with the numbers.
All right.
So, David, what psychopathic mathematical formula have you concocted this week to come up with your score prediction?
All right. So the first part's pretty simple. The Detroit Lions are averaging 13.5 points with David Blau as their quarterback. We're going to round that up to 14 because even the Detroit Lions can't find a way to score only half a point. So they get 14 points. Now, the Buccaneers, I got a little bit more creative with it. Since entering the league in 2014, Mike Evans has missed three games to this point. Obviously, he's going to miss three more because of the hamstring. But in those three games since 2014 that Mike Evans has missed, the Buccaneers have averaged 20 points per game. So they're going to win 20-14 over the Lions. That's my math.
Interesting. Bucks fans will take it. A win's a win. All right. Well, for some of you, this is the end. So please check out everything going on over at BucksNation.com. Send us your post-game reaction voicemails to 813-444-5841. Follow along on Twitter at LockedOnBucks, at JArco_Bucks, at DH82_Bucks, and at Bucks_Nation. Now, if you are part of the group that enjoys our now weekly segment on Fridays, it is time for David Reviews Star Wars. Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. What did you think of Attack of the Clones?
It was absolute trash. It was terrible. It sucked. It's definitely the worst movie in the series. I hated it. I never want to do it again. Don't ever make me watch that movie again.
It's bad.
It was terrible.
It's bad.
It was absolutely terrible.
Now, there are some parts that I did like, but it's
overall pretty bad. I liked the... What were the bombs that... Whatever, the first Fett guy? I can't remember
his
name.
Oh, Jango?
Jango,
the seismic charges?
Yes. I liked those. Those were good. Some of the fighting scenes were cool. Like, you know, I mean, it's war... Like, war... I mean, that's easy, though. That's, you know... who's the guy that did the Transformer movies?
Michael Bay.
Yeah, I felt like it was a Michael Bay movie. It was like, okay, so there's some mindless dialogue between explosions and guns. That's pretty much what this movie was, except it started off with a whole lot of mindless dialogue that was absolutely unnecessary. Well, I wouldn't say it's absolutely unnecessary. They just did it terribly.
I hate sand. It's coarse and it's rough and it gets everywhere.
Like, what? So many times I wanted to slap the crap out of my television. But I realized it wasn't my TV's fault. That it would probably ask me, or actually my TV would probably slap me for making it deal with it. Just not good. Not a good movie just at all. And really, man, I mean, honestly, and I hate it for him because you say, you know, he's not bad or whatever, but it was Anakin. Like, that character was just garbage.
See, and I really enjoy the character of Anakin.
In
but
this movie?
not Episode 2 Anakin. Yeah, but do you see where Luke gets his whininess from?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what George was going for.
I think George is just a whiner, to be honest. Like, I imagine that if you go have dinner with George, that his steak is never going to be cooked right, and it's going to be totally unfair. What is it with all the... super galactic universe, you know, all these heroes whining that things aren't fair. Like Han Solo complained about things not being fair. Luke Skywalker complained about things not being fair. Now Anakin's complaining about things not like.
Just unfair. Wait until you get to the Jedi Council scene in Episode 3. You'll get more unfair. It's unfair.
Incredibly unfair. Like, that is the dumbest. Stop saying stuff is unfair, because that's just gross. Like, when you look at me, or when you as a character, you're like, it's unfair. I want you to lose. Like, as soon as you say that, I want you to lose. I do. And then the whole, like, I get it. Anakin is Darth Vader. But does he just have, like, we don't need all the, like, the precursors. And again, it just goes back to the whole, this whole Jedi Order is like super smart and super, empathetic. And like, they feel each other and they can feel each other's feelings. And they have like, and all this, like, you didn't see this coming. Like, every single person, Samuel L. Jackson, the green dude, the dude with the beard, you didn't see this coming. Like, how can you not see this coming? It's coming from a million miles away, from a galaxy far, far away. You should see this coming, and you should stop it. You should just completely stop it. But they're not, because they're stupid. And it's not their fault. It's the writing. The writing sucks. Because you know what? As I'm watching the movie, it dawned. I've said a lot of words. Do you want to chime in?
No, go ahead.
As I'm watching the movie, it kind of dawned on me. Like, so from the very beginning of the movie, you know, where they walk in, And Obi-Wan is like, oh, you know, don't fall into the pit or whatever. He's like, oh, I pulled you out of there, Matt. Like, oh, we're just going to start laying the groundwork for Anakin turning into a little schmuck right now. Got it. Okay. And throughout the entire movie, that's all it is. Like every it's like the dude is like the most bipolar guy you've ever met in your life. It's like one minute he's like, yes, master, you're the wisest person I've ever known. And you're a father figure to me. Very next week, it's unfair. He's trying to hold me back. What? Stop it. I get it. He's going to turn evil. We all know that. We all understand this. You don't need to lay it on this thick. Like, that's really the thing is, I think they tried so hard to intermingle this. He's going to be evil someday with he's a young kid in love and doesn't know what to do about it together. And those two emotions don't mix. Like, I mean, there are some toxic relationships in this world, right? But even your most toxic relationship starts with love. Like, you can't simultaneously be breeding hate and anger and love and empathy. Like, the two don't mix. And I think that's part of the problem in this story is they're trying to do both. They're trying to have Anakin be this, you know, puppy love over, what's her name?
Padme.
Sorry, dude, don't give me crap.
Okay. Oh, no. I wasn't. I like Padme.
No, I like her too. I'm bad with names. So, you know, we got this whole puppy love angle where he's like, you know, fawning over her and every night I go to sleep, I think of you and blah, blah, blah. Okay, got it. And then the next scene, it's, you know, just intense anger and angst. It's not even anger. It's like dad wouldn't let me take the car to the Sonic to go get a milkshake. Like, it's so stupid.
I really question Padme's decision making.
Yes.
When she's with him at his home at his mom's husband's home on Tatooine, shout out Kleeg Lars. And he goes to find his mother. She's been just completely beaten to death. And he gets back and he tells Padme, they're animals. So I slaughtered them like animals, and not just the men, the women and children too. And she's like, yeah. I still love this guy.
I think I'll marry you.
Yeah. In a secret ceremony.
Yeah.
That no one knows about. I think you're right. They did. They tried to push the hot temper side just too much. And yeah. And again, this is my least favorite of the Star Wars movies, but I will still choose to watch it over about 99% of all other movies because it's still Star Wars. So I still get enjoyment out of it.
I will never watch this movie again.
Yikes.
Ever.
But I understand. I understand. Trust me, I do.
So I'm glad you brought that up because that moment in the movie was the moment that I realized just how stupid the writing for every little angsty, whiny moment before that was. Just how stupid it was and how worthless it was. Dude, if there is ever a moment you need, like, you can't look back at the creation of Darth Vader, right? Because young Annie is not Darth Vader. That kid is not evil. He's been through some crap. You know, he's a slave and he's definitely, you know, edgy about it. Like, don't call me a slave. I'm a person. Got it. All that stuff. But he's not, like, the evil is not coming yet, right? The evil's coming in this one. And I understand because I mean, it has to. Like, the next one is where he becomes Darth Vader, at least emotionally, whatever. So I understand you got to lay the groundwork. But nobody is going to look at this story and say, okay, what are the key moments where Anakin Skywalker turned into Darth Vader and go back and say, you know what? It was when she said she likes sand and he was like, nah, man, sand sucks. That's never going to come up. You know what's going to come up? Yeah. You know what's going to come up? What's going to come up is when he went to save his mother and she died in his arms. That's what's going to come up. You know what's going to come up? When he lost complete control because there was nobody there to help him. There was no Obi-Wan. There was no Quan Chi. That's not his name. What's his name?
Qui-Gon.
There was no Qui-Gon. There was no Yoda. There was no Samuel L. There was no Padme. They weren't there. And by himself, he lost control and he killed everybody. That's going to be one of the crucial moments. And then if you want to, you can even go to the fighting pit where he sees the woman he loves tied up and she's getting clawed at by really giant, like ridiculous looking cat things. and he can't help her. So he loses it a little bit more and he gets a little bit more angry and he goes a little bit crazy. And you can even have him like in the fighting scene, like they got to stop him like, dude, hey, like you're on the friendly ship, man. Like we're all friendlies here. And he's like, it's almost like shell shock. He's like, holy crap. Like, okay, I can stop fighting for the moment. And like, that's one of the key moments. Like you could have framed this in like three key moments in this movie to where like, just have him like, dude, just have him be the young kid in love. Like, oh man, I can't believe I get to see Padme again. I dream about her all the time. And then the whole mother angle, right? The whole mother angle, because the entire time, like he's talking, you know, Obi-Wan says, you know, you're not feeling well. He's like, oh, I'm still not sleeping. He's like, oh, you still have the dreams. Like, yeah, I keep seeing my mother. She's calling out to me like she needs help. He's like, oh, well, you know, you got to focus on what you're doing, man. We got business to do or something like that. Like, where's the angsty teenager then? Where's the, hey, dad, I need to go to the store to pick up a Slurpee. No, son, you're not getting a Slurpee. Oh, damn it, dad, you never let me get a Slurpee. Like, I never saw Anakin say, Obi-Wan, we need to go find my mother because I feel like she's in trouble because I have the Force and these dreams are real and she's in danger and I need to go save her. And he goes, no, you have no mother because I stole you from her. And now you're mine and you do what I say. Like, where's that? Where are those moments? Because when he finds her dead and he kills everybody, he comes back. What does he say? It's Obi-Wan's fault. He didn't let me come get her. It's unfair. Bro, when did you try to come get her? And I understand. Well, it's probably before the movie. Like, they didn't want to fill that dialogue in. That's the dialogue they got rid of, but they left the sand in. You know what I mean? Like again, cut the sand and insert the I want to go save mom, and Obi-Wan says, no, I got the beard. You're not going nowhere. And that makes a little bit more sense, but you don't even need any of it. Literally, man, you could open the movie, right, with them coming back from a mission. Okay, you can have a little bit of ribbing. Ha ha, you know, Annie, glad I saved you. Make sure you don't do this. He's like, ha ha, master, pretty sure it was you who did that one time. Okay, we're buddies. And then he sees her, and it's love, and he's like, hey, dude, you're not allowed to be in love. Chill, calm down. Your emotions or what your feelings betray you, like all that crap. And then they do these missions and he goes a little overboard on the mission because he's in love with her. He's like, hey, calm yourself. You're a Jedi. We do this a certain way. Da 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 da, even though she's here. And it's not this fake anger, BS, you know, kind of crap. And then he's having the dreams and he's like, Obi-Wan, like, I'm pretty sure my mom's true. He's like, no, you're just stressed because you're going through this and you're about to become a full-fledged Jedi. So it makes sense to, you know, to feel guilty about leaving her behind and da da da. And basically, it's not I'm not letting you do it. It's I'm convincing you they're just dreams and it's not real. And then you find out it's real. And then you lose your ever-loving mind and you kill everything. And then you get mad at Obi-Wan because he convinced you that your dreams weren't real. But you don't need to come out and look at her and say, I killed them all. I killed the women and the children too. Because you know what evil does? Evil hides itself. And I know that's not a concept foreign to these writers because all the bad guys hide themselves. You know what I mean? So they know this. So you know what evil's not going to do? Evil's not going to come out and say, hey, I'm evil. How are you? That's not going to happen. Right? So you see what I'm saying? Like all that stuff is so unnecessary because in that moment, I'm angry that my mother's dead. I'm angry that I knew she was in trouble, but my mentor convinced me that she wasn't. So now I'm losing trust in him. So I've got anger, I've got mistrust, and now I'm hiding stuff. I'm hiding a secret from the woman that I love because she doesn't know what I just did, and I'm hiding that. Then we get to the battles, and I see the woman I love chained up, getting assaulted by these animals, and I feel helpless because I can't help her. And then, I mean, you could even have it to where Obi-Wan's like, hey, I've got an idea, Anakin, do this and we'll get out of these chains. And Anakin's like, yeah, no, I'm good, bro. I'm going to go help her and does his own thing, right? Huh? I mean, wouldn't that be a little bit of a story? And then it works out or whatever. And then same thing, like he's freaking out. Like you can build this to where you see these moments of kind of psychological decay happening to Anakin where he's succumbing to his emotions, which would obviously lead to him, you know, succumbing to the dark side. And I got it. It's hindsight. Like, I'm not a Hollywood writer. I have the benefit of seeing the movie and picking it apart without having to build it. So it's easier to tear stuff down than it is to build it up. But man, this movie sucked.
Now do you see, and this is the irony of all of this. Well, first, you did bring this up. So I have to ask, uh-huh. How glorious is Ewan McGregor's beard?
I mean, it's good.
That is a glorious beard.
Anyway, this is what's so funny to me is with as divisive as episode 8 was, and, you know, people calling the director whose name was Rian Johnson, they call him Ruin Johnson. And you have this whole group of fans that they call themselves the Fandom Menace, and they're anti, you know, the Disney trilogy because they're pushing social justice and why is a girl stronger in the Force with no training? You know, why is she stronger than Luke and yada, yada, yada. It's all crap. It's all a load of crap.
It's a lot of stuff I was not aware of.
We'll get into that as we get to the sequel trilogy.
Yeah.
But it's these group of fans that are screaming, Disney is destroying George's vision. Disney is destroying what George Lucas built. These same people, do you now see why back in 2002, when Attack of the Clones came out, were saying George Lucas has ruined my childhood?
Because this is George Lucas's vision.
Yes, this is all the prequels were written by George Lucas, the man that created it all.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And it's bad.
Yeah, it's terrible.
But the people that wanted to, you know, kill George Lucas and you know, prevent him from making any more Star Wars are now the same ones clamoring to have him back. Do you want to know what George Lucas's idea for a sequel trilogy was?
Hmm.
You know, in 7 and 8 and 9, of course, we have the story of Rey, and we have Finn, and we have Poe, and we have X-Wings, and we have lightsaber battles and all this stuff. George's vision for a sequel trilogy was to break it all down into a microbiotic level to explore the midichlorians.
The little particles of energy between everything that make up the Force.
No, the midichlorians are what are in the blood of the powerful Jedi. I don't know if you remember in Phantom Menace when Qui-Gon does the little pinprick on Anakin to test his blood, and he says his midichlorian count is off the chart.
Okay.
Yeah, George wanted to continue to explore. He was going to double down because people were pissed about the midichlorians. What do you mean it's in their blood? It's supposed to be this outside force and yada, yada, yada. No, he was going to double down, and he was going to break down episode 7 into a microbiotic level to explore the midichlorians.
It was be like the first guy that became a Jedi was like a space miner or something and hit like a cosmic vault of energy, and it spilled all over him, and he became the first Jedi, and then his descendants. That would have been lame.
Yeah, it was going to be bad. It was going to be real bad, which is why I laugh at all the people that still I told somebody the other day they were complaining about The Last Jedi Episode 8 in a Facebook group. And he goes, I can't believe these people are still trying to defend Rian Johnson. And I said, you know what? I will continue to defend Rian Johnson because he made a damn good movie. And the fact that you're still crying about it 2 years later is sad and pathetic. If you don't like it, don't watch it.
I won't, you know, episode 2 ever again.
Exactly. But are you going to go on Twitter and complain for the next 2 years about how much you hated Attack of the Clones?
No, because it's on record on Locked On Bucks. So all I have to do is replay this episode and like I can relive it in all of its disastrous glory.
Like my wife and I sat down and we watched movies like Black Swan and Burn After Reading. And those are some of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. You know what I don't do? When I'm on social media, I don't continue to talk about how much I hate them because I hated them and I moved on.
Yeah, like I actually am a Natalie Portman fan. Like I think she's a pretty good actress, but I've never seen Black Swan because that looks like absolute garbage.
And it was one of those movies, and I love Mila Kunis too.
I'm not really a fan.
Black Swan was a good movie up until like the last 20 minutes. And the last 20 minutes twisted this movie that I was enjoying into just one of the absolute worst displays of cinema I have ever witnessed. And it really just pissed me off. I was legitimately angry. Like, it looks like you guys were sitting down writing a fantastic movie and you had no clue how to end it. So you were just like, eh, we're just going to take a crap and that's going to be the end. Like, and Burn After Reading was just terrible from beginning to end.
I don't even know what that is. But it kind of reminds me from the sounds of it of like the Avengers that was 3.5 hours long, but didn't need to be 3.5 hours long. Like, let's sit at this table and figure out how we can make this movie ridiculously long for the purpose of making it ridiculously long. And I'm a fan of those movies.
But that, to me, didn't feel like 3.5 hours.
Oh, it felt like 3.5 hours.
I sat down and I watched The Irishman on Netflix about Jimmy Hoffa and, you know, the one with Pesci and De Niro and Pacino.
Not
great movie. I love Scorsese movies. That felt every minute of the 3.5 hours. To Avengers, it didn't feel that long to me.
Definitely felt that long to me.
All right. Well, David, how many lightsabers are we giving this one?
None. It gets none.
You can't give it a zero.
I'm giving it none. It doesn't deserve the empty shell with no batteries in it. It's got none.
There were still some redeeming moments in this movie. If nothing else, the Obi-Wan Jango Fett fights deserve a half of a saber out of five.
All the way up until the ridiculous interaction with the cable. Yes, I agree.
And then you had the chase where you got the seismic charges that you enjoyed.
Yeah, that was cool. So so now that you brought that up, let's talk about this fight scene, right? So Jango, right? At one point, Obi-Wan is trying to force his lightsaber back into his hand and Jango wisely wraps his arm up with this cable and prevents him from doing so. And it's all great and everything. And then Jango ends up flying over the side of the whatever. And Obi-Wan says, oh, crap, this is going to suck. And nearly gets pulled off. Or no, he does get pulled over the ledge because his arm is so wrapped in the cable. Which, you know, it's amazing to me that his arm didn't just get ripped off. But, you know, he's a Jedi, so I got it, whatever. And then, you know, they're sitting there and all that. And then Obi-Wan ends up going over the edge when Jango finally cuts the cord. And in pouring down rain, Obi-Wan flies over the edge. Yeah, so Obi-Wan goes flying over the edge and, you know, he throws the cable on a very conveniently placed bar and grabs hold and goes flying down and is able to not just hold on to the cable, but it doesn't even slip like a half a centimeter down the cable in the process. I'm like, okay. So as I'm watching, I'm like, all right, yep, got it. You're a Jedi. It's action. It's for the kids. Whatever. Move on. And that was fine until they're in the little pit thing and Obi-Wan can't for the life of him figure out a way to get out of things. If he has the grip strength and upper body strength to withstand that cable interaction with Jango, how is it that he cannot pull a chain out of rock?
I have an explanation that you're either going to like or you're going to really, really hate.
Yeah, I'm going to hate it.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Because this was a terribly written movie.
That's true. Because then when the chain does break, because eventually the chain, I can't remember what it was that caused the chain to actually break free. But when it does, they zoom in. Oh, hey, I got something else. They zoom in on the eyelid, right? On the metal eyelid where the chain is ripped through and it breaks and it goes bing. I'm like, oh, it was a paperclip all along. That's interesting. that's fun.
Was that when the giant praying mantis like went to go stab him and he pulled the chain in the way?
Yeah. And like the monster pulled the chain because the Jedi is not strong enough to pull the chain out, obviously. So the giant praying mantis has to pull the chain out. But it's the same Jedi who was strong enough to catch Jango Fett off of a wire cable falling off the edge of this platform and then was again simultaneously strong enough to then himself fly off the edge and hold on to this thing Tarzan style in the pouring rain without even so much. Because like that's the thing too is like when he got up back on the platform after the whole cable thing, he throws his hand out to force the door open. Nothing. Like no blood, no nothing. Like, I mean, just little, like, it just feels really lazy. Like, just little things, like, that little detail, make his hand bleeding. You know what I mean? Make his hand bleeding. Like, I understand he's a Jedi, but they can still die. Like, they're not immortal. So make his hand bleeding, at least. Like, man, I can't believe he did that. No way in real life he would do that. And then he gets up, throws his hand out there to open the door, and there's blood coming from his hand. He's like, oh, crap. He did it. But, man, look at all the will it took because he damn near sliced his hand off. Got it. But then you put him in this pit, and he's literally attached to a stone pillar by a chain on one eyelid, and he can't pull the sucker loose? Like, come on, man. Just consistencies in the story. And then, speaking of close-ups, what is with the silhouette of Anakin and Padme talking against the desert igloo? What was all that about?
I honestly do not remember what you are referring
to. So they're having dinner, and, you know, he's like, where's my mother? And the guy tells him, you know, she went out, you know, doing all this stuff, and she hasn't been here for a month, and, you know, she's probably dead. And so Anakin, in true fired-up teenager fashion, goes up outside and stands there waiting for the sun to go down before he takes any action, because that's how you save the day. And when Padme comes up to check on him, I'm assuming, she walks up, and as he's telling her basically he's going to go fight these guys alone and get his mother, the camera pans over to the desert igloo and focuses in on their shadows. And that's all that's on the screen, is their shadows as you hear them talking. What?
I don't have a good explanation for that. However, I do have a good explanation as to why he was waiting for nightfall.
Why?
Because that way he could infiltrate the Tusken Raiders' village undetected. Like, that's ultimately what he was waiting. He was waiting to, you know, infiltrate under the cloud of darkness, which, I mean, that's a pretty logical tactic if you're going one man against an entire village of people.
I feel like if you're one man who can wipe out an entire village of people.
Well, I don't think the intent was to wipe them all out at the time. I think that was more of a anger spur of the moment thing when his mother died. He was going in for a search and rescue. It ended up being a search and slaughter.
I'll give it to you.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I'll just give it to you.
As for the focusing on the silhouettes, I don't know. It was nothing trash there.
James, it was trash.
It was bad. Now, do you see why that's my least favorite?
I do.
Now, lucky for you, I don't know if you started on episode 3 yet or not.
No.
I love episode 3. Some of my absolute favorite moments in all of Star Wars are in episode 3. The dialogue, still not great.
You know who episode 2 Anakin is?
Oh, God. Sean Payton.
He's Ryan Leaf.
Yikes.
He's supposed to be great, supposed to be the next big thing, but for some reason the dude just keeps whining and losing his temper on everybody who doesn't deserve it for no reason, and he just sucks.
I'll accept it though.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll be very interested to talk with you about episode 3, because of course you and I are going to have to do that show early, because exactly 1 week from now, I will be 1 week from the time we're recording, not the time you're listening. Exactly 1 week from this moment, I will be 1 hour into The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah. So I'm staring at the title screen of Revenge of the Sith right now. And I'm noticing that evil Anakin has his face partially covered because evil doesn't expose itself intentionally. George.
His eyes have also turned yellow at that moment.
They have, which were Vader's eyes yellow? Like, did I just miss that?
You never saw Vader's eyes.
Yeah, he did when he was dying.
But see, at that point, he had become Anakin again, because that's when he kills the Emperor.
He's all soft and okay. Gotcha.
Which is why his Force ghost appeared as Hayden Christensen, because why not?
Except Hayden Christensen looked really creepy.
But anyway. All right, so David gives Attack of the Clones a half of a saber because I will not allow him to give it zero. So he gave it a
fake half.
He gave it a hilt. Not even a partially ignited lightsaber. He gave it a hilt just for the seismic charges.
It's a gift shop knockoff.
And you did get a decapitation.
Yeah, but of like one of the coolest characters in the movie. I don't want that.
But that's right there is the birth of Boba Fett.
Yeah, but does that actually come back in the story, or is that just something like, oh, the fans are like, oh, that's why Boba Fett is the way he is. Got it.
It comes back in the Clone Wars, not
okay,
the movie.
Then I'm good with it. Or wait, is that, that's cartoon?
Yep.
Yeah, no, not good enough.
But we're going to get through the cartoons because, remember, we have to keep this going season after season. You know, we
only
can do...
Only if the Buccaneers win 7 straight. That was the deal.
We could do an episode-by-episode review of the Clone Wars or Rebels. And we could not get of the Clone Wars or Rebels, one of the two cartoons.
There's another cartoon?
There's actually 3 cartoons. I don't watch the third one. I watched a few episodes with my son. Not for me. But we could do one episode each week next season and not get through a full season of the cartoon.
I don't have any interest in
That's
doing that.
Wild to me.
We can keep up the movie reviews, but eventually it's got to change, like, movies or genres or series or something.
We'll figure something out. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you for those of you that stuck with us. I believe David's review of this movie is, it's pretty appropriate. I did not agree with his reviews of, or his review of Empire Strikes Back, but he's entitled to his opinion. But on this one, we see pretty much eye to eye. The only difference is he'll never watch it again, and I will still watch it voluntarily because it is indeed still Star Wars. And if nothing else, I can laugh at some of the bad dialogue.
You're like the 0-16 Browns fan that went to the parade.
Yep. Yep. But I also know that if I watch Attack of the Clones, then right after I'm probably going to watch Revenge of the Sith, and I love that movie. Again, still some really tough dialogue, but really enjoyable film. Really, really good movie. I like that one a lot. So, we thank all of you that stuck with us all the way through David Reviews Star Wars. Please check out everything at BucksNation.com, follow along on Twitter, and just honestly, have yourself an absolutely outstanding weekend. Thank you so much for joining us right here at Locked On Bucks.
Do you have the time to listen to me whine about nothing and everything all at once? I am one of those melodramatic fools, neurotic to the bone, no doubt about it. Sometimes I give myself the creeps. Sometimes my mind plays tricks on me. It all keeps adding up. I think I'm cracking up. Am I just paranoid? Grasping to control, so I better hold on. Sometimes I give myself the creeps. Sometimes my mind plays tricks on me. It all keeps ending.